Hello, welcome to Malkier Talks, a Wheel of Time theory podcast. Today, I am joined by the beautiful voice of Andrew the Bard. Say hello, Andrew.
Well, hello, and thank you very much for having me on.
No, it's great to have you here. As you told me in the pre-show, let's make sure we've got everything ready, chat. This is your first podcast appearance, is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Ooh, I'm going to make everybody jealous now. I've got Josh in the background. He's going, we need to book him for the Black Tower, you know.
Well, we'll see. See if the offers drops in after this.
Well, who knows? I remember I booked Zool, and then suddenly everyone's like, what, Zool, you do podcasts? What? Now she's being booked. So, yeah, maybe that will happen. For those who don't know Andrew, firstly, why are you hiding under a rock? And secondly, Andrew, would you please tell them where they can find your stuff and what you do?
I do music, and I write songs about the Wheel of Time and about the Wheel of Time community. And I am all over the internet. I'm mostly known as Andrew Bard of Time on Twitter and Instagram and my YouTube channel. Yeah, Andrew Bard of Time, something like that. Just search for that and you'll find me.
Yeah, it's brilliant stuff. If you haven't listened to any of his work yet, you are truly missing out. And I highly recommend that you go check it out. I will put all of Andrew's links in the description of the podcast so you can find them. But yeah, if you search Andrew Bard of Time, you'll pretty much find it anywhere. And yeah, it's great stuff. He makes all sorts of amazing songs for, as you say, about the Wheel of Time and the fandom, the content creators. You do the opening song for Dusty Wheel. You did a song for the Black Tower Podcast Boys. You've done a song for Zool. It's just an appreciation of all the work she does for us. It's some amazing stuff out there.
Yeah, if you're in the community, you'll probably get a song someday.
Yeah, there's a long queue, I hear. So
yeah, making a list. And
yeah, you've got to get in there fast as well, because we keep telling him he needs to charge.
Yeah.
And I think we're slowly talking him into it. So, you know, if you've got there already, consider yourself extremely lucky, because you've nabbed a huge bargain. But yeah, so anyway, I've invited you on today, Andrew. I've wanted you to come on for a while, and we were like, what should we talk about? We're not too sure. And then we bounced a few ideas around, and I don't know how we stumbled. I can't remember how we stumbled onto it, but we thought we would discuss the slog, wouldn't we?
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, I mean, I know a lot of people consider the slog to be an actual slog. And I was, you know, when this came up, I said, well, I don't see it as a slog, but I'm more than happy to talk about it. And you were on the same mindset as I was. You don't think it's a slog either.
No, and I'm on my 49th reread at the moment, and I just hit...
Excuse me?
Yeah, 49.
Right. Someone needs to check out everyone else who claims they've read it hundreds of times, because that has got to be a record.
Yeah, but I have a bad memory, so it really doesn't help me. So that's why I can read books so many times.
Oh, you have that magic power of like, oh, I've just read a 14-book series, but I've forgotten it instantly. Yeah. So I can read it again as if I've never read it before.
Exactly.
Wow. I'm truly jealous of that. I think the only other person I feel who's read it that many times. Sorry, we're on a tangent already. We've barely started.
No problem.
Is it John? I think John from What Up has. I'm sure he said he was in the 30s or 40s or maybe even more.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
But yeah. Okay. Well, we will have to. I'll have to contact John and be like, hey, how many times have you read it? Oh, there we go. We've just, wonderful chat has told us it's in the 40s himself. So.
Yeah.
I feel like a bit of a competition going on here.
Yeah, I guess I have to speed up so I can keep my distance. So I have to do it in double speed, I suppose, on the audiobooks.
Yeah, there we go. Double speed. God, that's got to be interesting. But yeah, so we've come today to discuss the slog. And as you've previously just heard, we're both on the side of it's not a slog, but we are willing to entertain the fact that it may actually, to some people, seem like a slog. So, you know, yeah. we'll go from there. So we were just pretty much going to start on, I felt that we should start on the common reasons that people seem to dislike it. So what's the thing that people say to you most when they say, oh, it's a slog because of this reason or that reason?
I think most of the things I hear, it's about Fael's kidnapping and about the succession in Andor. Because there happens quite a bit in those books, depending on what you would call the slog. But I think we're talking about Winter's Heart and Crossroads of Twilight, right?
Yes, yeah, those are the main ones for it.
Yes, so because there happens so much in them, I think. But just the sections in the succession and with Perrin, I think people feel go to a different pace than the books before.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. You know, it's as you say, it's a very different point in the story. Now, I mean, I love the slog because I enjoy the aspect of seeing the same time period across two books, but two completely different sets of characters. But the point you've made when we were discussing it, which I think is an even better way to look at it, to be honest, is that you're saying that it gives you the feeling that the world is stuck, the world of Ranland, Westlands, whatever you want to call them, is stuck and they can't move on and things are just very much, you know, no one can get anywhere and they're just...
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's almost like I thought about... for anyone who doesn't know, English is not my native language, so I got to think of words. but the world feels like stuck, you know, it's supposed to be heading for the last battle, but it just trods on like it's treading water almost. And, you know, you get that sense of not the calm before the storm almost.
Mm. Which is interesting because previous to those books, they've just fixed the weather and the weather was frozen in time.
Yes.
And now we've moved on to everything else feeling stuck in time and not moving on. So,
yeah. So almost like before the weather was stuck, but now, you know, the feeling. So he lets the feelings, you know, of not getting anywhere festers inside you almost.
Yeah. The taint has moved, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, yes.
It has now enveloped time itself.
Yes.
I love that. No, I was, my brain just went on a very weird tangent then. So one could almost argue that when they unstuck the weather using the Ball of Winds, they then stuck everything else in exchange.
Yeah. Those bastards.
Bloody sea folk, don't know what they're doing.
Exactly. Can't trust them.
No, you know, it's just, you know, they just wail around on the water all day long and, you know, just, yeah, I don't know. But no, I thought that was a brilliant point. So for me, I've always, as you say, the two things everyone raises about the so-called slog is that Fael's kidnapping and the succession in Andor. And now, honestly, for me, I've always thought that what I seem to get more of is the Fael kidnapping thing as opposed to the succession in Andor.
Absolutely.
But I can absolutely see why they think the succession in Andor. If you had to pick one of those two, which one would you think is slower?
For me, actually, the succession feels slower, but the feeling is in the kidnapping, I think. I don't really like the succession part of the books, actually, not that much. It's too much politics for me.
there's a lot of politics there.
Yeah.
We know that politics is never usually a highlight for anybody. But yeah, there's a lot less emotion involved. Sorry, I'm just reading chat where someone's put in, don't hate me, I don't mind the Fael kidnapping or the succession plot. No. We don't mind it either. So, you know, this is not a hate on the slog thing. This is a love the slog thing, but we're trying to be, you know, fair about points that are, I was on the Black Tower podcast a short while ago where I discussed rewriting the entire slog. So, although I didn't mention the succession, so perhaps I should have tweaked something about that. But anyway, side note there. Yeah, it's just, there is more emotion in the kidnapping of Fael, the way that, you know, she's trying to escape, and all, you know, her sort of flirting with a brotherless to whose name eludes me right now, to try and help them escape. But for me, the reason I would, if I had to lose one, or I found one more tedious than the other, I suppose, is Elaine is just, she's very foolish.
Yeah.
You know, she makes very, very stupid decisions in some, points. She's amazing. I mean, the politics stuff, she really nails some of that, and is really, you know, a bit of a tactical genius in that respect. But she is a bit foolish with some of her other decisions, especially the in regards to the Black Aja. I mean, I don't know how you feel about that, Andrew.
Oh, yeah, I think I've blocked out some of the parts. That's where my memory comes in to serve me not very well. But yeah, she is kind of rash. She thinks herself almost invincible.
Yeah.
You know, like once they captured a member of the Black Aja in the dungeon, and she goes down, you know, in a disguise and is going to interrogate her. And then she gets captured again, as mm-hmm. always. And that's I find that part kind of tedious of that whole plot, actually.
Yeah. For me, when they actually sort of won the succession war, it was almost like things had, using the analogy we put in, had come unstuck.
Yeah.
So she got kidnapped. You know, Birgitta makes a deal to with the kin, or is it the Wave Mistresses, the Sea Folk? I can't remember which one, but yeah, one of the sets of channelers to be like, right, get us out there, and you know, all these people getting sacrificed, balefire going everywhere, and then suddenly it's like, oh, well, let's just take this gate then. Now we've had half our troops wiped out with balefire and win the war, and then suddenly, oh, okay, so she's queen now.
Yeah.
It went from like, it was like 5 mile an hour to like 95 mile an hour.
Yeah, kind of. And then everything happened at once.
Yeah. As the difference there for Fael's situation is, there was a lot more build up, obviously, but you know, the actual fight, there was build up and development of that, albeit over a period of time. But the, you know, the collecting of the troops and the plan, and you know, putting fork root tea in the water and things of that nature. So,
yeah, it feels slower because, you know, you get a, one of the few, you know, chapters from Fael's perspective. Sorry,
it's okay.
Words. So, and that's not something you're really used to. I don't know how many times she had a chapter of her own. And, you know, and you're in a new spot. You're in the Shido camp city, or what do you call it? And see it from...
Camp. Yeah.
Camp. Yeah. And, you know, so... But I kind of appreciate it because you get to see something from her perspective for, you know, the very few times you get that. So you get her thoughts about the matter, but instead of it's about Perrin all the time, it's actually about they have to survive, how they're going to get out. And she has to grow as a leader, just as Perrin has to grow as a leader during this time.
Yeah, definitely. It's a very unusual situation for a leader to be in. We're all prisoners, in a sense. Obviously, they're free to move around the camp, but that's it.
I think it's kind of fun because, you know, she is in the camp and she's captured, but she is captured with two queens, you know, with both Aleandra and with Morghese.
Mm-hmm. Although we don't know about Morghese. But
no,
still.
No, exactly. But still, they're two born leaders who have been leading their kingdoms, but it is Fael that actually takes the lead.
Yeah. I mean, with Morghese, you can understand that because Morghese has been posing as a servant.
Yeah.
But even Aleandra is very much a case of like, okay, well, we'll do what you suggest. So it's an interesting dynamic, or as we go to Elaine in Camelin, yes. She's just, you know, got the palace and trying to win over some other people and balance a few borderlanders in the mix, and that's really it, isn't it? So it's... It's like you've got someone trying to be queen and not a lot of action or weird situations, and then two actual queens, and then is Fael, she's the niece of the queen or something?
Yes, I think so. Yeah, she's...
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
The niece or the cousin, I think.
Cousins.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, so you've got like someone related to a queen and two queens, you know, trying to just be free as opposed to trying to rule anywhere. It's a very unusual set of circumstances going on. And very different to some of the story that we've had so far, to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, even if we just put aside the fact that it's, you know, every point up to now has been a continuous story. And, you know, if you've been with someone for two chapters, then what happened to the others in those two chapters, you get a little bit here or there, but pretty much, you know, the time has just moved along. Whereas we got here and suddenly it's a case of, well, here's, I don't know, 3 months from half the people's perspectives, and here's the same 3 months from the other half of the next book.
Yeah. So,
do you feel that the publishing times made any difference here?
Maybe. Yeah, was it 2 years between?
Yeah, so when I looked it up, the publishing dates I've known someone else has talked about this recently as well. I saw it somewhere, which made me look in detail. Like books 1, 2, and 3 are all out within, you know, less than 2 years, basically. I mean, one was out in March or April or something, The Eye of the World, and then, you know, book 2 was out in November or something ridiculous like that. So it happened very, very quickly at the beginning. But then when we get to those books,
yeah,
it actually becomes quite easily in some places over 2 years between books.
Yeah.
So, and it was starting to pick up popularity. This is when I picked up the book. I'm pretty certain that it was at least... I'm terrible at remembering which book is numbered in the sequence, but I feel like there was sort of 7 on the shelf. So I had those and was very quickly like, pop, 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 you know, just knocked through them. And then suddenly you're waiting a couple of years for each book in between.
Yeah.
It's quite a long time if you've been used to, you know, a book a year, I suppose you might say.
Maybe, but I also think when I'm looking here at the wiki as well, just a little, just to have a back me up. And yep. I see the plot summary, I think about, you know, you have both at the Winter's Heart. You start with Perrin and the Fael kidnapping, and you have the Succession War. And then in Crossroads of Twilight, you have Egwene, much more, leading the rebel Aes Sedai on the siege of Tar Valon. And yes. And you still had the Succession War and getting the hold of Andor. So you have really heavy on the politics, and that is by nature a little slower than, you know, the action packed, you know, like he actually cleansed the Sidine in Winter's Heart, and that's quite a momentous thing, I think.
Oh yeah, definitely. That is a pretty huge moment in the books.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter how many you've read or how many times you've read them, that's always a big moment to read.
Yeah. But I think that just because they are so kind of much politicking, but I love Egwene's point of view is one of the ones I love the most in the books, actually, especially in the later books.
Yeah, I have to say I very much agree with that. You know, in the beginning, she was an interesting character, you know, getting captured on we'll go on a side note for the moment, by the Shan Chen was, you know, quite an interesting way of her character developing and, you know, her skill advancing and stuff. But it was always like, some of these other characters interest me a bit more.
Yeah.
You know, like what's going on with the overarching story, I suppose. But then very much while she was learning to dreamwalk, and then when she went back to the Aes Sedai and they were like, be in charge, please. But we'll try and manipulate you in the process. That I got very sucked into that. And I really enjoyed that, how she manipulated them whilst not becoming a pawn of Swan.
Yeah.
So I suppose that's why when I think about the slog, I never really think about the fact that that happened with Egwene at the same time.
No, but I think that's, you know, you kind of overlook the parts that has a more rapid feel. So even it's a lot of politics, a lot of things happened when they're besieging Tar Valon, for example. Mm. So it doesn't get that feel that, you know, parenting literally going through the snow, you know, it's going through a slog already. So
yeah, he's slogging through the snow. Yeah, he definitely needs. I mean, they put the carts on sleds, but he needs a good pair of snowshoes himself, doesn't he?
yeah. But I think you see it there as well, and I think Robert Jordan chose to show how the land is faring bad, because you know when they go to a town to buy food and supplies for the armies, you know, everything is infected with weevils, and you have a lot of those bubbles of evil and small things like that happening to Perrin and his followers.
Yeah.
That you don't really get as much as in the other places.
No, in terms of bubbles of evil that we hear about or read about, technically speaking,
yeah,
they definitely, you get more of them in Perrin's storyline than anywhere else.
Yeah,
you know, you hear little bits here and there of other ones, but I feel like Perrin went through at least two or three situations where it was Dark One's influence messing things around, or you know, causing more weevils in the flower and stuff like that. So
that is probably because I see a Taverin as, you know, like a light source, and the bubbles of evils are like moth drawn to the flame.
Yeah.
So it's more prevalent around a Taverin than, you know, Egwene, who might, I think, should probably be a Taverin, but, you know.
Yeah, I feel like she probably would have been a Taverin in any other time when there wasn't the three boys.
Yeah.
You know, there's definitely enough things that just sort of fall into place with, obviously not without any effort whatsoever, but, you know, there's definitely some things work out particularly well occasionally, even when they're tough for her. So I've always thought that she should have been Taverin, and in any other time frame she probably would have been. But when you compare them to the three boys, it's, you know, who are the most powerful Taverin since Artor Hawkwind, it's quite tough.
Yeah. I do know, I thought about why she wouldn't be, and I had a really good reason, but I can't remember it.
Is this your reading thing coming in again? Where
so
it applies to thoughts as well.
I can neither remember what I read or what my conclusions of what I read become. So that's why I'm the worst bard in the world. I can't remember my own songs.
Right. Well, we need to get you a service together to put together your songs, put them onto to sheet music and some lyric sheets, things of that nature. I don't want to go almost maybe something like a karaoke system where it comes up on a screen very easily for you to read, but not a karaoke system. You are definitely not a karaoke singer in any way, shape, or form. You are a fabulous singer.
I love singing karaoke.
I love it too, you know, but you are better than, you know, you. I can't see you hosting karaoke. That's what I meant. There we go.
Been offered.
Have you?
Yeah. Local bar. Do you want to be a karaoke keeper?
Side note, my sister used to do karaoke. It's fairly entertaining, but a lot of work. You think it's a case of put a song on and then sing a bit, and it's actually like there's so much going on. It's crazy, but yeah.
Yeah, it's mostly, in the place I was offered to run the karaoke, it's mostly, you know, keep the drunks away from the volume knob.
Does that include the karaoke host?
No comment.
No comment. Love it. Okay.
What were we talking about?
I don't know. Something about a really long piece in the books. It's apparently a slog or something. I don't know. But yeah, I don't know. It's one of the things I've, and bear in mind, until I really found this community, I had no one to discuss the slog with. So it was kind of a bit of a shock when I found out. But I always, I viewed it as two halves of one story myself. And it wasn't until, I'm going to throw in another fandom here for a moment, but until I was talking to someone about movies in general, and I was comparing again, now it's infecting me, Andrew, I can't remember the movies that I was talking about at the time, but I was comparing Jurassic Park movies, that was it. So someone said like, oh, I didn't like the second Jurassic World, and I was like, it was kind of like, you know, set up for the third movie, you know. So as long as the third movie finishes the story they start in the second movie, it's like a, you know, one giant movie just in two parts. And I compared it to the Avengers Infinity War and Endgame, if they hadn't told us they were going to do two movies,
yeah,
and we expected it all in one movie, and then they gave us Infinity War, although we knew there'd be more, we would be feeling like, ah, you only gave us half the story. What's going on?
Exactly. You would be kind of disappointed.
Yeah. So, and that's how I've viewed the books. It's just not until recently I can put that sort of analogy to it, but that's how I've always viewed, you know, these books. It's one big part of the story that's just told in, you know, sort of two or three sections, depending on how you view the slog.
Yeah.
And I think if you view it that way, you know, going in with the expectation of, you know, you get part one in this book and part two in that book, or part three in the third book, however you want to look at it, you're going to go in with a different expectation of what you're going to be told, a different promise from the beginning of the story.
Yeah.
You know, it's, and I think you would have a different experience reading it. I don't know. What do you think?
Probably. Yeah. I'm actually trying to think here. You'll have to edit all this out.
That's fine. I can vamp. I'm used to that. That's okay.
No, but I think you're right. It is kind of split up, but I still think, especially in Winter Sword, you get the cleansing of Sadie. You get a pretty, you know, epic ending there. And you know, in Crossroads of Twilight, Egwene gets captured. So, fine, you don't get a Doom Eyes Well ending there. But, mm-hmm. but yeah, still, I still think they wrap them up pretty good, because you're not going to wrap them up like, oh, this is the end of the series, like, you know, a TV series. You know, they have an open, they end the season, but not the series.
Yeah, they end it on a cliffhanger or something, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good. Chat has also just pointed out that apparently two of the books were originally meant to be one book, but Robert Jordan had to split them up because it was too much for one book.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So yeah, that definitely makes sense if you think about you know, some of the story being from one time period, but two sets of perspectives telling the same time period. That really fits in. I suppose if Brandon had done the last three books in the single book that we originally thought we were going to get, he could have possibly done the same thing. Okay. Oh, let's talk about that for it. What if Brandon Sanderson had split the final quote book into three, but had done them the same way that the slog is done? I love that. I'm doing, you know, when you do those air quotes with your fingers, I'm doing that now and nobody can see me. I'm just looking at myself like, why am I doing air quotes? I'm in a room by myself. But what do you think the reception would have been if he had done the last three books as the whole time period, but just from, say, you know, the first one is Matt and some characters, and the second one is Perrin and some characters, and the last one is Rand and some characters?
I think it would be perceived as much slower than they actually are. Would have been interesting, I suppose, but... Yeah, I don't think it would have worked, actually. Not that, like, the three last books.
No, I feel like people would have read the first one and gone, hold up, half the characters on here, what's going on?
Yeah.
And then, you know, got to the end and thought, well, that was a crap book. And then Branagh goes, wow, there's two more, actually. And then people are like, but you've got to the end of the promised story? I don't understand. And then, yeah, that would have been, oh, can you imagine the uproar? He probably would have never worked as a writer again.
Maybe.
I don't think we would have got a TV show, that's for sure.
No, probably not.
Do you call it a slog when you talk to other people about that part of the books?
You know, the slog everybody's, I think, says is, you know, the kidnapping. It's 90% of the people I hear discussing it, it's, oh, the damn kidnapping.
I skipped the final chapters.
Yeah. And I think I have done that in the past, actually, but because I'm just at Winter's Heart now, I didn't.
Ladies and gentlemen, scratch off one of his rereads.
It doesn't count. So I'm 48. No. Fine. But it's like when you're feeling sad, instead of just, you know, no, I'm supposed to be happy. I need to be happy. But sometimes you actually have to revel in the feeling, you know, not shy away from it. So it's kind of that with the Fail kidnapping chapters at this moment. So I actually try to embrace the whole part of the book series.
Oh, nice. I mean, that's a really interesting sort of way of describing it. So almost like, because a book comes in waves, you know, when you tell a story, you can't have everything at, you know, 10 out of 10 constantly throughout the entire book.
No.
I mean, I've read books that have tried to do that, and some of them can do something of that nature. They occasionally dip it to a 6 for about a chapter or two, and then they dip it back up to 9 and 10. But, you know, those are books that are very short and designed to be very high pace energy all the time. I don't feel like you could do that with this, but I say stories have their moments of 10, and then they have moments of, you know, 2s and 3s and 5s and things like that. So in a way, are you trying to say perhaps that this is, you know, a 3 or a 4 in terms of intensity, but spread out as opposed to here's a chapter or two, and it's more like here's a book that's a bit more of a 3 and a 4?
No, I don't think that's what I'm saying. I think that I'm saying it's, I mean, it's always well written. It's, mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, you need to, in this, if you're just talking about the failed kidnapping,
yes,
you know, there are so, it's sad. It's really, really sad. You don't get the levity for Matt. You don't get the, you know, Rand is Darth Rand, fine. But he is, you know, he does stuff. He does more humongous big things, more than and Perrin. And Perrin gets so obsessed with getting his wife back. But, yes. You know, I can relate. I can, you know, and actually when I grow older, I can more relate to Perrin as a character than I did when I was younger, when I started reading the book. I felt more like Matt or Rand. But as I get older, I get a little bit more stoic, you know. Yeah. Want to think things through. Don't do anything rash. When you're big, you got to be, you know, you got to be take it easy on people. I'm kind of a big guy. I work out. I'm strong. So
got those well-toned calves. We've seen them.
Yeah, you know. But so you want to think through what you're going to do. And then you're put in a position when you have to act fast. But you can't act fast because, you know, they're so far ahead of you. You can't catch them up. You have to find them. And then you have to make a plan how to rescue them.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
So, yeah, I like to see how he goes to a really, really dark place. And I think almost a more relatable dark place in Perrin than in Rand, because he got his madness.
Yeah. But no, I absolutely agree there. Yeah.
But Perrin does more, you know, he's more like a normal person, or what do you say? You know, I'm doing the rabbit ear quotes now too.
Yeah. But yeah, I understand what you're saying. It is a much more relatable darkness, depression, you know, moments of anxiety and worry and things like that. It's definitely something that I suppose the average person could appreciate, because as you say, Rand is going mad genuinely, you know, the taint is corrupting him. You know, even after the Sidine's been cleansed, his madness is still there. That's, you know, Nynaeve tries to heal it and realizes that that's beyond even her, to be honest.
Yeah.
Although I don't think she'd like to admit that, to be honest. But yeah, it's definitely very relatable. I do understand what you're saying. When I read the books when I was 15, I definitely identified a bit more with Rand and Matt than with Perrin. But as I've gotten older, Perrin has become my favorite male character, even, you know, through some of his... I mean, I consider the moment Fail very selfish. I don't know if you feel that way about it.
Yes, yeah, she can be kind of but this is something that's always problem with the Wheel of Time relationship, communication.
Oh well, yeah. I mean, we could definitely do. I could do an episode on communication. Just oh
god, oh gosh, the lack of thereof.
If they communicated, this would be a trilogy and not a 15 book saga.
Fair enough.
No, I mean, I don't know. It's not deliberate, but I feel that Perrin in some ways was quite selfish. I mean, not Fael, because Fael gets kidnapped and Perrin's on a mission. And I'm absolutely, before anybody goes, I'm absolutely not saying, well, if your wife get kidnapped and you're on a mission, mission comes first. I'm absolutely not saying that, you know, like make the decision that's best for you. But there were some points of that where he goes so blinkered and so blinded by the must save Fael just fought in his head that he ignores everything else. Absolutely everything else. He's not running the camp properly. He's not keeping an eye on, you know, the all the soldiers that are, you know, at each other's throats half the time. And I understand why. I'm not saying I don't understand why, but I look at that and think, I can't help but think that's a little bit too focused. And for me, it's a little bit, it comes across a little selfish. It's the only word I can find to describe it. I'm sure there's a better word out there. Someone who's good with the England can hopefully put something in the chat and give me a better word to use. But yeah, that's just my view on it.
Yeah, but I think, absolutely selfish. And I think that's what I kind of like about it, because, you know, I said that I like to see him because he grows as a leader, but he does that by failing also, because that's how you learn. You learn from your mistakes, and it takes time before he actually realizes what the hell is going on. Like, you know, when they capture one of the scouts for the Shido, and he straight up chops his hand off.
Yeah.
And that's so cold.
That is very cold. That
is so insane. And that he went to that length. And I can totally understand. That's the whole Taken, you know, if you take my family, I will hunt you down.
Well, yeah, he's already had his family taken from him, hasn't he?
So, yes. So, you know,
Fael is his last family in the world apart from his regular friends.
Yeah, and that's something too. I think, you know, nobody of these characters actually addresses their trauma. And they all have trauma.
Yeah, definitely. They do not address that at all. You're absolutely spot on. We did get a few words popped in the chat. For instead of saying selfish, egocentric.
Yeah.
Not bad. But I like the second suggestion, self-absorbed. But as is rightly pointed out, you know, a couple people, it's being discussed now, which is nice to see. But, you know, he really sticks to himself. He's not the hero of the book, but he's one hell of a man. And obviously people saying they can appreciate if their family member was kidnapped, they'd just let the world burn and try and save them. nice point here, Amber, as well, actually. He didn't have anybody left. He lost his family, but he gained a nation. That's quite a level of responsibility to get. So
true that.
Yeah. I don't know how I'd handle that, if I'm honest. I can barely run my kitchen team. I don't know how I'd run a nation.
Yeah, I damn right.
Indeed. I think in terms of the Fael bit, I feel like we've made some good arguments for why you should, if not enjoy it, at least still appreciate it. And not be one of those people who just, well, I skip a Fael chapter in this book. Yeah. I mean, if you want to, obviously, it's your reading. It doesn't affect me if you skip chapters. So if you want to skip chapters, by all means, skip chapters. But I feel like we've put out some good arguments for, you know, still reading them. Back to the succession story. Redeeming features here?
I guess the bath scenes.
You got some good imagination going on then, Andrew.
Of course I do.
I mean, we're still waiting for an Elaine casting, so, you know, we can just, you know, we'll wait and see what they put in there. But there's a lot of bath scenes, a lot of maternity scenes where it's like drink the goat's milk and everyone's, or this, you know, very weak tea.
I got the timeline all fumbled up. When is she? Yeah, she's kind of pregnant.
Yes.
At the snap of the finger when she hooks up with Rand.
Yeah, because it's just before he goes off to cleanse.
Yeah, exactly.
Hold up. You two have gotten some. I haven't. let's sort that out sort of thing. It's a little more tactful than that, but you know, that's kind of the crux of what happens. And yeah, she's pregnant, and that leads for some interesting scenes. Her inability to channel occasionally, yeah, things like that. Avienda goes into the Lord of Dreams, or even I think is a Bagheera in one time or something. I can't remember. Yeah, she does.
But is it here? She gets the Min tells her that her children will be born safely.
Yes,
and that's so. Oh, why did you tell her that? Why? Mm-hmm. Why? I hate that.
Yeah, as we learn at the very end of the story,
yeah,
like, you know, the children can be okay, and you can still die in the process. I mean, you know, women die and their babies are still born.
Yeah,
you know, it's obviously not the situation you want and not the one you're expecting, but it is possible. So she's very gung ho with, you know, oh, I'm safe until the children are born. That's fine. I also would like to point out right here that although the children would be born and be healthy, what's to say that 10 minutes after they're born, all three of them aren't butchered,
yeah,
by,
exactly,
you know, enemies. Like, you know.
That's a given time frame. Oh, they will live healthy until there are 87, all of them.
Yeah. You know, I mean, for all you know, she puts herself in a terrible position just before she gives birth because, like, it's fine. I can go into battle even though I'm about to give birth because my kids will be born and that means I'll stay alive. Yeah. And then mid-battle, you give birth and then everyone's killed. So it is, yeah, it's a horrible, horrible thing to have told. I mean, it's nice to know that your children are going to be born safe, but in the respects of how she takes the information and handles it, it's very frustrating, I would say, for this part of the books.
Yes, it is. And all the updates from, what do you call, Missanori and the housekeeper or what?
Oh, yes. Yeah, so she runs the household. Yeah. I can't remember her name now. Master Nori is he's in charge of all the clerks and things, yeah, of that nature, and then becomes a spy master in ways, or combined with yeah, Miss is it how no I want to say Halford's, and that's a bike shop here in the UK. Oh, someone in chat, help me out here. It's how Halford. Oh, I can't remember.
No, but, me neither.
Yeah, they sort of run that together, don't they? I liked their little sort of competition with each other, like giving their reports together and not really wanting to do that and stuff. I did enjoy that bit. I have to say that was entertaining for me.
Yeah, but that's also a good, you know, a sign of a good ruler. You know, keep them on their toes. You know, I think she almost does it without thinking, Elaine. So you just, like, she had to stack the other houses against each other. She stacks her employees against each other. So, you know, they get a little competition going. So they actually do as good, better. You know, they want to outsmart the other one. Or,
yeah,
so it's the game of houses.
It is
playing all the time.
It is the game of houses. I'm glad that's not in Andor when this is all going on, because the game of houses is very interesting, but at the same time, almost as confusing as i.e. your customs or i.e. your humor.
yeah, but I think she knows it. I mean, she teaches Rand a lot earlier in the books. But so I think she can use that knowledge even in Andor. But she can be a little more blunt about it than in Carrion.
Yeah, definitely. So, but I don't. Yeah, I think. Yeah, it's just, I'm just trying to think of redeeming features for it. I mean, obviously, you get some brilliant humor with Birgit. I don't know how you want it. I know people pronounce that Renine Harfour. Reen Harfour? Yeah, I think Reen Harfour. Thank you, chat. Zool has popped in there. Harfour. I do appreciate it.
Yes.
I wasn't too far off, thank God. Yeah. This doesn't bode well. I'm in a content creator trivia thing for SpoilerCon tomorrow. And it doesn't bode well if I can't remember. Well, hopefully they don't ask me names of characters like that. But anyway. Yeah, I think it's that some of the humor here with some of the characters is the redeeming features for the succession part, because I like Elaine. She is, you know, a bit spoiled in places, but in this particular part of the story I find to the hardest to deal with, I have to say. So the other characters having their little jokes and, you know, little rivalries and silly stories and things happening, I do, that's redeeming for me. I found that quite funny.
Yeah, I can agree with you there. I'm trying to remember, because I don't skip those chapters, but I kind of snoozed through them.
Yeah. Almost. Yeah, you sort of skimmed through them.
Yeah, I know what's going on, you know, it's happened, blah, blah, blah. Not that, that's, you know, I'm not that worried when, you know, the other houses are laying siege to Camelon or the castle, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
It just doesn't feel like high stakes, so I'm not that nervous. Even when I read it the first time, I just went, okay, this is a smaller part of the book, whatever, like, I kind of felt like.
Yeah, I never felt that she was ever going to not be queen.
No.
I always felt that she would... in fact, that was probably the first time I read it. I probably read through that and thought, why are we spending so long on this? I've never once felt in the story that she wasn't going to end up being queen.
Yeah.
So I don't understand why we're spending so long trying to see if she'll make it.
I think that in the if we're going to on a little tangent here, mm-hmm. I think in the show they can actually play it up. I get the feeling that, you know, they talk about Ander, but I didn't get the feeling that Ander was like the powerhouse of the nations, but it kind of is.
Well, yeah,
but I didn't get that feeling when I read the books. It was like in the last, you know, books that they are kind of the big thing here, but I think they can play that up in the TV show for sure.
Yeah, I definitely agree there. And obviously putting this part of the story on screen as opposed to having someone read it,
yeah.
You know, you can pace it and still show all the relevant information and the interactions.
Yes.
You can speed the pacing up so it won't, you know, I know I did a segment on another channel where I said, oh, we should rewrite it and do this for the TV show if I was a showrunner. But, you know, as was pointed out then, and it was very valid when I was thinking about it, you don't have to rewrite it for the TV show because, you know, watching it on screen is automatically a faster medium than reading it in a book.
Oh, yes, yes.
Oh, I love chat. I love recording when people are in chat. I was expecting riots over an Aes Sedai puppet monarch. Yeah. It never happened.
That's a good,
wow.
That's kind of a good point. You know, she's been training with the Aes Sedai.
That is, yeah.
She comes back with Aes Sedai and the kin and, you know, sea folk and all other weird people. It's not a bad idea. Yeah.
That is, wow. That is not something I ever considered.
No.
I suppose that you could argue that it was written in such a way that you were never meant to think that. But clearly not, because, you know, someone in chat has thought about it.
Oh, what's her name? The advisor for Elaine and, oh, gosh. Was it Dailin?
Dailin, yes.
Yeah, because, you know, and that's something I also think they can rewrite for the TV show. You know, you have to show that Elaine is actually capable. Because, you know, Dailin would be a fully capable ruler.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just because Elaine is the daughter heir, why would she just heel over and say, yeah, you're the daughter heir, it's all good.
Well, I mean, my impression of Andor's successions were if there was a suitable heir that wasn't a complete nitwit, to take over when the queen passed, then, you know, she just became queen afterwards and that was it. Unless one house really decided, hold up, I think I can get enough support and overthrow you here, which I suppose is a rebellion as opposed to a succession war.
Fair enough. But you see the question in the chat? That was a really interesting question that could be held against her.
Oh yes, that was definitely going to bring that up.
You know, yeah, that's a good question. If she's going, I mean, she's an Aes Sedai, and they live for a long time. How would a nation react to a leader that could rule for 200-300 years, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And then her children, you know, if yeah. they can channel, then okay, they'll live that long too.
Yeah.
But if they can't channel, you know, she's going to be queen still when her grandchildren, you know, her great grandchildren are around, sort of thing. So, you know, imagine if she had a daughter who couldn't channel and, yeah. Suddenly she's like, right, well, I can't channel, so I can't go be an Aes Sedai, but you'll send me off for training anyway, because that's tradition. And you're going to live for 300 years and I'm going to live for, you know, 90 years or something.
Yeah.
And, so I don't get to be queen either.
Yeah.
That could be quite a, yeah, that's going to be quite a bummer. I've been yeah. born a princess. I'm never going to be queen because my mother will live three times longer than me.
Yeah.
I'm also going to die before my mother. And yeah, wow. So yeah, the whole range of kids down the line there, if Elaine, you know, was queen for hundreds of years, it would just be like, right, well, what do I do then?
Exactly. Or would you abdicate? You know, go out and live with Rand in the wilderness or something?
Yeah. Run maybe, off with, you know, go light some pipes together, some yeah. sort of magical way. But yeah, that is very much skipped over.
Or would she rule as God Emperor forever?
Wow. Okay. Now we're bringing in some cosmic stuff here. I mean, yeah, why not? You know, 1,000 years as God Emperor. It was a very stable society. If you've read that book, that's actually my favorite Sanderson book. I've got a big tangent. I love Warbreaker. That's, you know, he's got bigger novels and more successful novels, but that's my favorite one. I'm like, I want a sequel. But yeah, sorry.
No problem.
Tangent there again.
That's but what yeah,
I mean, she could be like, oh, well, I'll rule Andor for 50 years and then I'll go be queen of Kyrian for 50 years and someone else can take over Andor. And yeah. then when they die, I'll come back and then someone can take over Kyrian for me. And, you know,
wait a minute. Your suggestion that Elaine is like Putin, you know, first I rule here and now I step down a step and then I take over again.
Well, you know, she's got the time to do it.
Yeah, probably.
I feel like she might be a slightly better monarch than Putin would be. You know, not to bring in too probably. Many real-world things here. But, yeah, she's got the time. I mean, I don't, yeah. I think that she would run off and join Rand.
Yeah, probably.
You know, and have a quiet life and be like, oh, I've run the place. I've run most of the world because she's Queen of Kyrian as well. I've run most of the world for 50 years or 100 years, whatever. And like, yeah, okay, someone else do it now. I'm going to take some time. I'm retiring and, you know, living in the, just the waste, no, not the waste, sorry, living in the countryside with Rand and Min and Avienda. Yeah. Oh, God.
That's so. Are they going to live in the sex igloo?
I don't know. You know, it's like, where do you live? You know, you get one that's, oh, I like little country living. One's like, oh, I'm used to grand cities. One's like, I live in a desert.
They have at least two very powerful channelers, so they can probably build whatever.
Yeah.
And Rand can light his pipe.
Yeah, Rand, he could probably light fires as well. So, you know, Rand's in charge of central heating. Elaine and Avienda are in charge of construction. And Min is there for she's moral support site supervisor. You know, yeah. She does, you know, she's in charge of the building. Yeah, you put that there. You know, I want two bathrooms here, please. I'm not sharing. You know?
Need boot at least three bathtubs in every bathroom.
Yes, yeah, three bathtubs in every bathroom, and we need a very large sort of shoe closet for the boots.
Yeah.
Just for men, obviously.
Yeah, of course.
Right. You know, we're getting on so many tangents. I feel like we've covered enough of the slog discussion just in general.
Indeed.
That perhaps we should start rounding it out a little bit. Indeed. Now, I don't want to I don't want to jump the gun here, but you mentioned that you had something in the works.
Yes, it's not quite finished yet, but hope it will be when the
leave them in suspense if you want.
We can leave them in suspense, but there is another single coming very soon. Hopefully, just after this episode drops.
Oh, yeah. So this episode, for those listening live, actually drops next Friday on the 9th, which coincidentally is when round two of the Great Tam Search bracket finishes. Round two starts tomorrow, finishes next Friday, for those of you listening and want to participate. But yes, so hopefully this little surprise single will drop next week, won't it, Andrew?
Yes, indeed. So follow me on social media and YouTube and everywhere else.
Yeah. If you have not, please chase down Andrew the Bard. You search him on Twitter. You're on Instagram as well, aren't you, Andrew?
Yes, I am. And on YouTube.
Yeah. And you can see all his fabulous works there. As mentioned, you know, if you are around listening to this next week and you haven't, you still have time to go join in round two, but the last part. But for those of you, you know, who just want to have some fun, please stop by my Twitter account and vote on the Tam jokes. I say round two starts in terms of live recording tomorrow, but when you're hearing this, it will be finishing today. Today will be, oh, who's running the last one? I forget who's running the last part. But yeah, Fantology, A Hero's Journey. We've got Reading the Pattern and A Hero's Journey are doing next Friday's actually. So on release day, A Hero's Journey and Another Turning Podcast as well are the four content creators who are running round two for me. Round three is the Black Tower podcast guys. Josh has left here, the chat, he was here earlier, but yeah, they're hosting the second part of round three on the 23rd of October. And on the 16th of October, I'm feeling very blessed now. I'm quite happy to announce this. Ebony, our wonderful Ebony, who runs some of the Facebook groups and is part of Dragonmount, all those sorts, you know, all those wonderful channels that they put together for us. She has agreed to run part one of round three for me on her Twitter account. So I'm very excited about that. But yeah, if you don't know my other, obviously, you know, if you've, you know, listened to the podcast, you know where to find that. So I'm not going to there. But if you haven't seen my cooking and my narrations on YouTube, search Malkier Talks on YouTube, you can see those. I've got another one coming next week. You know, they're a lot of fun. People are enjoying those apparently. So doing that and, you know, all the other details for all the things I do and Andrew's details will be in the description so you can check them out and see the things we do. But yeah, I think we will tie in a nice little bow there. And yeah, we will see you next time. And Andrew, thank you so much for appearing on the podcast. Your first podcast appearance. I feel quite chuffed.
Yes, indeed. Thank you very much. It was great fun.
Wonderful. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you want to, you know, give us a tune on the way out, I can skip my usual goodbye. I'm quite happy.
No. I noticed that guitars are totally out of tune.
Well, fair enough. Oh. Well, I appreciate you being here, Andrew, and I'm sure we will hear your music again very, very soon. But it is good night from us, and as I traditionally say, I bid you good night, and may you always find water and shade.